Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. Our guest for today is Jacob Hornberger, president of the Future of Freedom Foundation, Bruce Merkin of the Marijuana Policy Project, and a couple of the Drug Truth reporters who have made it back into the fold. But first, a quick question for you. What have you done this week to help end the drug war?
Once again, we're going to talk to some folks about the future of freedom in America here, and I can't think of anybody more apropos to help do that than Mr. Jacob Hornberger. He's head of the Future Freedom Foundation. Jacob, tell us a little bit about your organization.
All right. It's the Future of Freedom Foundation, and we're found on the web at fff.org. I founded the organization some 15 years ago, and our mission is to provide people with an uncompromising moral, philosophical, and economic case for the free society. In a label, we promote libertarian philosophy, libertarian ideas, and we integrate these principles with the burning issues of the day. So we address all the entire realm of domestic policy issues as well as foreign policy issues.
Jacob, in my estimation, somewhere around the beginning of the 20th century, people kind of fell into one mold or the other. I mean, the Democrat and Republican parties have been pretty much predominant. People have been kind of, there is no gray anymore, it's all black or white, it's my way or the highway. How are we going to break this mindset? How are we going to move on to individual liberties and freedoms again?
Well, here at FFF, the Future Freedom Foundation, we have just so much faith and confidence in the power of ideas. Just what you're doing now, transmitting ideas on freedom. There's a reason why totalitarian dictators try to shut people like you and me down, and that is that they know that when ideas and truth hit a person's mind, there's no telling what the result is going to be. And so you can shift an entire company if you want to change a company's philosophy, but you can also shift an entire nation. And government officials who are in large part reaping the benefits of the control that they're maintaining over people's life savings and their income and their well-being, they know that power. So I would say that that's our best vehicle, continue transmitting ideas. And the Internet provides a perfect vehicle for that. That's why a lot of our energies are now devoted to what we're doing on our website.
Well, that's absolutely right. If I didn't feel that I could make a difference through these radio programs, wouldn't be much point in exposing myself the way I do.
That's right. And the fact that you do it, you're essentially saying ideas matter. They have consequences. And this is how the great strides in humanity have always taken place. I mean, the great achievements like Magna Carta, the Petition of Right, the Declaration of Independence, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, habeas corpus, they've always begun with the idea that with people's ideas, sometimes a dangerous spreading of ideas because they threaten government officials in many instances. But that's how things get changed. It gets changed one person at a time through the transmission of ideas.
Well, Jacob, I think I ought to let the folks in on how I came to know about the FFF and your work. It was through an article I saw in the Laredo newspaper. You put out an op-ed, Only One Way to Eliminate Drug War Violence. Tell the folks about that article, please, sir.
Yeah, I grew up in Laredo, which is a town down on the Texas-Mexican border. I grew up on a farm there on the Rio Grande, and then I later went back after law school to practice law there. And I remember, you know, the I did some criminal defense work, some drug cases, and, you know, the DEA officials were, you know, ardent and sincere and just where they were going to win the war on drugs, and they had all the standard bromides about how we were making progress, and we made a record drug bust, and, you know, this was some 25, 30 years ago. And today, it's worse than ever. I mean, you go down to Laredo, you've got all this drug war violence going on, especially in Nuevo Laredo. You've got more than 100 people killed. You've got the police chief that was just murdered. You got corruption in the government. You have gang wars just like during Prohibition. And so I decided I was going to write an op-ed down in my old hometown. And unfortunately, Laredos, the local newspaper, one of the two local newspapers, picked it up. And it's saying, look, the cause of all this violence that hasn't changed over 30 years is the drug war itself. It's prohibition. And you've got the DEA agents and the U.S. attorneys and the local officials making the same bromides that they made 30 years ago about how they need to crack down more fiercely and how they need to bring in the feds and they got to do this and they got to do that. Well, as I explained in there, you're never going to get rid of this violence because it is the prohibition, the drug war itself that is producing the violence. It's just basic supply and demand. They make something illegal, like they did with alcohol, and it's basic laws of supply and demand. They're not going to stop the supply of it. They're certainly not going to stop the demand for it. People want to consume these things. But what they do is they turn it over to a black market, which is usually filled with unsavory people, especially in the narcotics business, drug business. And so you've got, instead of pharmacies peacefully competing for people's business, you've got drug lords and drug gangs. And the more they crack down, the higher the price goes, the higher the profits go because you're restricting supply. And so the more the violence is, the more the incentive to knock somebody out, the more of luring innocent people into the drug trade in the hope of making one big score. So their own efforts are counterproductive. They end up producing the exact opposite of what they hope to achieve by virtue of the war itself.
Well, there's that old bromide that if we don't learn from history, we're destined to repeat it. And we've certainly done that in the drug war. And they do it with these scare propaganda messages. Speed kills was known 30, 35 years ago. It was a big PSA campaign, but they pretend now that it's just been invented and we should look out.
Well, you're absolutely right, and your point about not learning history and repeating it is so good because, I mean, the perfect analogy is alcohol, which is a drug. It's a very, very dangerous drug. It kills many more people than the illicit drugs do by a factor of hundreds of thousands. And when you made it illegal, no matter how good your intentions may have been, you know, to stop alcoholism and so forth, we saw the results. We saw the Al Capones, and then we saw the need for the Elliot Nesses to fight the Al Capones, and we saw the corruption and the gang wars and so forth. Well, as soon as Americans realized, you know, this is ridiculous, they repealed prohibition, so lo and behold, the Al Capones of that genre disappear because now they can't compete. The alcohol lords can't compete against legitimate alcohol businesses. You don't need the Elliot Nesses anymore because you don't have the alcohol lords, and it's the exact same thing in the drug business. The only way to get rid of these drug lords and drug gangs is just to legalize drugs. They would be out of business overnight. And, you know, government officials know this, and but they make a lot of money off this thing, too. Campaign contributions, there's no telling how much bribes are going on, especially on the border, because those drugs get through one way or another. And there's a lot of people that are thriving and benefiting from this drug war, and that's one of our biggest obstacles.
We are speaking with Jacob Hornberger of the Future Freedom Foundation. This is Cultural Baggage, and you're listening to the Drug Truth Network. Jacob, again, talking about history, having to repeat our mistakes if we're not careful. The overdose deaths that result from the black market are primarily due to, we got untrained chemists making it, distributed by gangsters. Nobody knows what they're really taking. It parallels what we had in the old days with bathtub gin and that scenario.
There's no question about that. That, in fact, when you hear about somebody dying from an overdose, that's usually not the case. It's usually the case that they have died from a corrupted dose of the drug that they're taking. And the reason it's corrupted is because they're working in a black market. There's no reputation or credibility that people can rely on, as you know, as compared to a reputable drug dealer, a pharmacy that's gotten it from a drug manufacturer. You're dealing with a very unsavory gang of people, and you certainly can't sue them for a defective product like you could sue a pharmaceutical company. Most of the deaths, as I understand it, from drug overdoses are really from corrupted drugs. The other factor on this thing is the needles, where people are getting AIDS and those kind of diseases from bad needles. Well, in a free and open marketplace, there's not all this surreptitious action taking place to get a hold of drug paraphernalia, because everything's above board. And I think that's one of the things that we ought to really be focusing on. The other thing I ought to mention about the surreptitious business is that this drug war also discourages drug addicts from seeking help, because as soon as people find out that they are addicted to drugs, they may get turned in on. I mean, the drug war is in large part enforced by rats, people that rat on other people, informers. And so the drug addict's got to be very careful who he shares that with. Well, in a free and open marketplace like in alcohol, if you've got a drug problem, an alcohol problem, you can be open with people about it. You say, I got this problem, I need some help, I need counseling. When it's made illegal, it drives it underground, and that's not conducive to recovery.
Jacob, I don't know if you saw the story. It came out now, I guess 2 months ago. A group of 500 noted economists did a study and determined a shift of many billions of dollars by first stopping the arrest of marijuana smokers and then by taxing its sales and distribution, that it could be a swing of, I think, some $14 billion for this nation.
I didn't see that, but you know, when I started the Future of Freedom Foundation some 15 years ago, you know, I would go on radio shows such as this, and I could light up the phones immediately by saying it's time to end the drug war. I mean, people were just outraged. They couldn't believe such a thing, that you could actually, you know, call for legalizing drugs. Today, I think everyone concedes that it is now part of the legitimate debate and discourse in this country. I mean, you've had Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize-winning free market economist, that has said it's time to end the drug war and turn drugs over to the free market. And now you've got federal judges and federal police and law enforcement people saying this thing, it isn't working, it hasn't worked, it's time to end it. And there's variations as to what people are calling for. Some are saying, as you suggest, regulating it, taxing it, and so forth. There's others that are saying, look, just put it in the free market and let the market operate. But, yeah, it's now become a legitimate position. You even have conservatives calling for drug legalization, like Bill Buckley. So I think that's the only way this country can move, Dean, because there is no positive result of this war. Like I said earlier, the harsher you crack down, the worse the problem becomes. And so the only ultimate solution to this thing is to repeal these drug laws.
Well, I do know that of those 500 economists that I spoke of, that Mr. Milton Friedman was at the top of the line signing off on that proposal. Jacob, we have for too long demonized our fellow man. I think there's a lot of bigotry involved in this drug war, and it seems to primarily, certainly in the long run, for prison terms and so forth, go after people of color. What's your thought there, sir?
There's no question about it. It is a war that is just rife with racism. If you look at the percentage of blacks serving long prison sentences versus whites, there's absolutely no question that the burden of the drug war falls disproportionately on blacks. There's a really good website on this. I think it's the Drug Policy Foundation, and they have a section called Race and the Drug War that is just excellent, that provides all the statistics in this area. And, of course, I think many people, especially in Texas, are familiar with the infamous drug case in Talia, Texas. where the feds and the state officials busted all these blacks on the basis of the word of some white law enforcement officer, and it turns out that his testimony wasn't very credible, and they ended up throwing out all these long sentences, like 50-year sentences, 60-year sentences, against people that were convicted without any evidence at all of physical drugs. The only evidence against them was the word of this law enforcement agent, and of course they ultimately threw out his testimony as being not credible. But yeah, this war provides that opportunity to go after people on the basis of race because of this. The other factor in this is the crack cocaine disparity that Milton Friedman, who we've already talked about, wrote an article about how the drug war itself had produced crack cocaine. It was the poor man's way to get around these exorbitant black market prices on cocaine, and they provided much bigger penalties for possession of crack cocaine than regular cocaine. Well, guess who was, you know, using the crack cocaine? It was people in the black community because they're poor. So yeah, there's no question that this is a very, very racist war.
You know, Jacob, I have never understood that that disparity between powder and crack cocaine. You can take a gram of powder cocaine and make 8 grams of crack cocaine. It's just upside down.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to wonder what's going on here. And for those that want to look for a racial aspect to this, don't have to look very far. Because it's, like I said, the people in the black community, the generally the poorer people, who also the Hispanics, tend to use the cheaper drug. And crack cocaine, as I understand it, provides a bigger bang for a smaller buck. And so they put the heavier penalty there. Why?
There is no logic to this drug war, is there, sir?
There is none whatsoever. And I think, Dean, we always have to keep in mind the moral case for this. Under what moral authority does the government put me or anyone else in jail for ingesting harmful substances? I mean, if you're not free to ingest a harmful substance, how in the world can you truly be considered free? I mean, we can talk about the failure of the drug war all day long, but even if it was the greatest success in the world, I would say there is no way to reconcile a war like this with the principles of individual freedom. And I think that's what we got to keep stressing to people. This is an assault on your freedom, even if you never, ever ingest an illicit drug or a harmful substance.
We've been speaking with Mr. Jacob Hornberger of the Future Freedom Foundation. Sir, once again, your website?
It's www.fff.org. We've got a whole section on the drug war, but we address much more than that. We've got a free FFF email update that goes out to people every day, and we consider it the finest free market editorial page on the Internet.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects.
Depression, hopelessness, hallucinations, suicide, seizures, fatal blood disorders, hypotension, fatal myocarditis, physical collapse, and cardiac arrest. Time's up. The answer for schizophrenia, Clozaril from Novartis Laboratories.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Since the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, the White House has given tacit approval to Afghan opium production and subsequent heroin manufacture. For the last 2 years, U.S.-occupied Afghanistan has been the origin of nearly 90% of the world's heroin. Although cultivation is down overall from last year, the U.N. reports poppy acreage more than tripling in some provinces. Andrei Hollis, the Pentagon's top counter-narcotics official in President Bush's first term, says that Iran, awash in a flood of U.S.-Afghan heroin, is now allowing that flood to empty freely into neighboring Iraq, where heroin trafficking is being used to significantly fund the anti-U.S. insurgency. According to this week's Washington Times, the Iraqi insurgents use the proceeds of trafficking U.S.-Afghan heroin in order to purchase weapons and equipment and to pay Iraqi citizens to conduct attacks on U.S. troops and to plant deadly improvised explosive devices. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
We're celebrating a one-year remembrance of a gentleman who died in Washington, D.C. Tell the folks a bit about that story.
The young man was named Jonathan Magbe. He was 27 years old. He was quadriplegic, having been critically injured at the age of four, being struck by a drunk driver, was paralyzed from the neck down, and suffered lingering pain from that injury. Just a little over a year ago, he was convicted of marijuana possession in the District of Columbia and sentenced to 10 days in jail. He would have been actually eligible for probation, but the judge decided to send him a message, if you will, by putting him in jail. And he died in custody, apparently due to pretty gross negligence and neglect by the jail authorities, who either didn't care or didn't know how to properly provide for him. This is a man who needed the assistance of a respirator to breathe properly at night. He wasn't given that, and he died absolutely unnecessarily. And today his family, joined by the ACLU, filed suit in U.S. District Court seeking compensation. But the other thing that people need to keep in mind, I mean, there are several layers of atrociousness in this case. It makes me so angry to even talk about it. But in addition to the just shameless and obscene neglect by his jailers, this is a fellow who should not have been in jail in the first place. He was using marijuana, and he told the authorities this, because of the pain that lingered from the injuries that left him paralyzed. And he made the mistake of telling the authorities that he would continue to use marijuana because it made him feel better. Now, Washington, D.C. should have had a medical marijuana law. The voters of the district passed a medical marijuana initiative in 1998 with 69% of the vote, and Congress has blocked it from taking effect. Had that law been able to go into effect, or had the new medical marijuana initiative that MPP tried to qualify for the ballot in 2002 been able to be on the ballot and passed, which it clearly would have, Jonathan Magbe wouldn't have gone to jail, and he would be alive today. And there's a lot of people with blood on their hands in this case. I hope at least some of them will be brought to justice by this suit. But the suit won't affect the members of Congress who intervened to overturn the will of the voters who passed a law that would have saved Jonathan Magbe's life. And it's unconscionable.
Well, I want folks to be aware that Mr. Bruce Merkin and all the good folks at the Marijuana Policy Project are aware, are working hard to make the necessary changes, and they do give a damn. And I wish you would get in touch with them. Become involved in making this change. Their website's mpp.org. Bruce, are we making progress?
Well, inch by inch, I think we are. But it's such a struggle. And it's not a struggle because of the lack of medical evidence. It's not a struggle because of the lack of popular support. It's a struggle because of gutless, foolish politicians. You know, we are, I think, very close to having a medical marijuana law become law in the state of Rhode Island. Bill passed both houses of the legislature overwhelmingly. The governor vetoed it. The Senate in Rhode Island has already overridden that veto. And we think it's very likely that the House, when it comes back into session, and we don't know exactly when that will be, but it will come back into session at some point, and they're going to vote to override. So we could very well have an 11th medical marijuana state by the end of this year or early next year. We had more members of Congress than ever this summer vote to end federal raids on legal medical marijuana patients in the states that have medical marijuana laws. So we inch forward. It's just, it amazes me that it's so hard, that there is still so much political resistance to something that just makes sense. You know, if someone's doctor thinks marijuana is going to benefit them, why should anybody care?
I'm Mitch Earlywine. I'm Associate Professor of Psychology at the University at Albany, State University of New York, and I'm the author of Understanding Marijuana, published by Oxford University Press.
Dr. Earlywine, there's a lot of news coming out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy saying that marijuana causes psychosis. What's the truth on that, sir?
The bottom line is this is misleading some of our teens. I think that it's probably a bad idea for people with schizophrenia to smoke marijuana, but I think it's a bad idea for them to use any psychoactive drugs. The problem is our teens hear this, they know other teens who've smoked marijuana and who aren't psychotic, and then they don't believe anything else we say once we say something like this.
I know that in my 40 years of experience, I've not run into anybody who's gone psychotic from its use. Is it just more reefer madness?
I'm afraid so. When you look at some of these studies, the less careful ones have asked questions about certain experiences that are very much like being high on certain other drugs. And so they ask people, hey, have you ever been really paranoid, for example? Well, that's a common effect of certain forms of cannabis, but that doesn't mean that somebody's gone psychotic, and yet they then include this as a psychotic symptom, and you can see how that could be problematic.
Well, I know that, you know, the arrest of 750,000 people each year might make some people a little paranoid.
Exactly. So you can imagine if you've got an item on a questionnaire that asks, are you afraid to tell people certain things about yourself? And you ask somebody who uses marijuana that every day, well, what a surprise. They say yes. It's got nothing to do with them being schizophrenic. It's just got to do with being concerned about drug laws.
All right, sir. Now, given the circumstance, what might be a better presentation of thought to share with our youngsters?
What I'd love to say is there are some risks for people who've got a lot of mental illness in their family. And in truth, this is a drug that's important in the sense that adults could probably use it without any harm, but the younger you start it, the more likely you are to run into problems with it. Problems like craving it all the time, getting in trouble with your work or with your school, and things along those lines. And these are the real negative consequences, not some alarmist idea that you're going to go crazy if you smoke marijuana. I particularly like to emphasize this to our teens because there are drugs out there that really are dangerous, and if the National Drug Control Policy tells one lie, that doesn't mean everything they say is a lie. So right now we've got a lot of problems with methamphetamine, and methamphetamine really does shrink the brains of users if you use every day for a year, and that's not a lie. And so I don't want them to dismiss every single thing they hear about drug dangers just because they've heard a single fib about marijuana.
Marijuana, threat or menace? According to the U.S. Office of National Drug Control Policy, marijuana use can lead to depression, suicide, and schizophrenia. Never mind that the rate of schizophrenia is unchanged since 1945, and that schizophrenics often self-medicate with marijuana. If you don't believe, you must be crazy.
My friends, you hear me, you hear our guests, I know you understand and believe in what we're saying. It's up to you to do something about it. What will you tell your grandkids you did to help end the drug war? And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. So please, be careful.
To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of cannabis.